Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World, 21st Century, and a distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. I welcome you to this October 4th COVID era edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM, that's WBAI, on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right, the York College radio community via internet is plugged in to our conversations and, of course, to our listeners throughout the country and globally. We are looking forward to a powerful conversation today. First up, in short order, we'll be hearing, hopefully, from Mayor Roz J. Baraka, the progressive mayor of the city of New York, to give us our monthly State of Newark report. And we'll get lots of information, but we'll also ask him about some national issues that are percolating out there, since this is a moment of incredibly powerful, a moment of inflection, actually, in many regards in terms of some of the projects and programs that are being talked about. You know, the whole world is on edge. There's a debt crisis. There's the whole question of these bills that are hung up in the Congress of the United States. What do they mean? What significance will they mean to you as ordinary listeners and citizens across the country? So we'll be talking about that as well. In addition, we're going to open the phones up and have a conversation about the one and only R. Kelly, the verdict on R. Kelly. Question is, predator or victim of the media? We want to have a conversation, just take the temperature of our audience on one of the most prolific artists of our time, one of the most renowned artists of our time, but renowned in several ways. My question is, he's been found guilty, but there's some people who are saying that, well, maybe this was not warranted. There are actually not only some men who argue that there's an attack going on against black men, and there are others who are saying, you know, we're just tearing down some of our prominent black artists and entertainers with these allegations and whatnot. So we certainly want to get your opinion on these matters, and so we'll open up our phones to the bottom of the hour. That'll be our sole topic, to just get your, you know, your perspective. Perspectives on it. Actually, later on in the month, I think it will be on September 25th, we'll have Tarana Burke on. Again, one of her interview on the issue of sexual assault and abuse internal to the black community was one of the more riveting interviews we've ever conducted here on WBAI, on Vantage Point. She is the founder of the Me Too movement, and she'll be with us. And then Professor Kimberly Crenshaw. If you don't know Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, she is the architect of critical race theory and a former student. I actually had the honor and privilege of teaching a class with her or teaching her as a student at Cornell University back in the day. And wow, how brilliant she has turned. Well, she was brilliant then, one of the best students I ever had, but she certainly has blossomed and is the architect of critical race theory. And she has a piece out basically raising questions about or outlining how R. Kelly was allowed to survive or to do what he did for so long. And we hope to get her on the show as well. I've been reaching out, trying to get to her. So somewhere down the line, and just to talk about critical race theory, frankly, I mean, you know, it'd be good to hear from the voice of the architect of critical race theory here on WBAI. We're waiting now for the mayor to call in for our State of Newark report. Again, to talk about the issues that are important, the developments that are important in Newark, New Jersey. And we do this once a month because we and the Institute of the Black World 21st Century have focused on Newark as a model city in terms of the issues and policies that are being articulated. The mayor has taken great pains to try to create policies which will transform the city. That doesn't mean these are not warts or difficulties and whatever, but we'd like the commitment that has been made and the process that is being outlined in order to try to achieve the kinds of progressive, human-centered, earth-centered, person-centered policies that will be people-oriented and participatory. So when the mayor says that when I become mayor, we become mayor, he's really have been working on that. And so we want to really amplify that. There are other cities, particularly Jackson, Mississippi, with the Honorable Chokwe Antar Lumumba, that we think likewise is making huge steps along these lines, but, not without critics and not without difficulties. But we like the way they're trying to master developing policies that will help people and also to encourage people to become engaged in the process. And there are others around the country, too. Unfortunately, one of them, Mayor Tubbs from out in California, I forget the city, was not able to be reelected. But we hope he's still around and sharing the kinds of ideas that we hope many, many, many mayors, particularly Black mayors, African-American mayors across the country, will step up to the plate and begin to make a difference, advocating policies that block gentrification, at least try to block gentrification, try to share wealth, try to do economic development, try to educate our children in a different kind of way, and to try to really engage people in the process, which is something that a lot of times people elect politicians don't do. A lot of times they want to get elected and it's a spectator sport. And, some mayors just say, okay, let me take care of it. That's not the way the Honorable Roz A. Baraka is doing it in Newark, New Jersey, which is why, we're so proud of him and how he is doing it. I understand the mayor is now ready to go. Mayor Roz A. Baraka, welcome again to Vantage Point.
Thank you for having me. What's going on?
You're what's going on, and I'm not saying that facetiously, metaphorically, not you, but I'm saying your administration, and we always like to bring you on to talk about the state of Newark because, again, as I was doing in my opening statement, where you're a trailblazer in so many ways, and so we just want to get some updates and some really, really critical issues in a very critical time, and you've done this for us every month. First and foremost, we just want to get an understanding of how the COVID crisis is unfolding in Newark. How are people responding? There's a whole question now of the booster shots and all of that. But we also have vax hesitancy and working hard to overcome that. So it would be great if you just give us an update on how it's unfolding in the city of Newark.
Yeah, our numbers have been steady, kind of teetering between 3% and 5%. So we are... this whole state of New Jersey is at moderate. Newark is doing a little better than the state of New Jersey. In fact, we just want to stay that way. We have about 60%, over 60% of the population, 12 and up, are fully vaccinated. 70%, over 70% have received at least one shot. So we're almost there where we need to be. So we're trying to get over 80 fully vaccinated by December. We'll see how that works out for us.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of outreach are you doing? I mean, you're obviously being successful. To what do you attribute the success that you're having that's greater than the state of New Jersey at large?
Well, just the consistency and staying on it. And New Jersey has to deal with other cities that – are obviously not compliant like they should be, and they have to factor those in when they calculate the entire state, that's an issue that we don't have to deal with as a city, though we have populations that are like that where it's not as great as the state of New Jersey populations. You have whole townships that are been very conservative, kind of backward right wing kind of stuff that they're pushing, and they're more concerned about the government telling them what to do than the public health. So that's a whole nother issue in and of itself. Refusing even to wear masks. So don't want the kids to wear masks. They don't want to wear masks. So the state has to deal with places like that. You know, and most of us in Newark are not, you know, we're not in that category. So thank God for that.
You know, as a radio talk show host, as you can imagine, sometimes, in fact, I must tell you, I have gotten roasted, almost run off the air by some of my listeners as I've been talking about why the vaccinations are important and why I believe that people should get the vaccine. And I've been called non-scientific and anti-democratic and a whole bunch of other things. So I'm just wondering what your I talk about what I call credible messengers. I don't trust the government. I don't trust a whole lot of things. But if I have credible messengers, I have black scientists, I have black doctors, I have, then I kind of listen to what they have to say. And that sort of helps me to make up my mind. I wonder how you respond to some of the backs people have.
It's the same thing. And you can only go by data. Like you, tens of millions of people in the United States have already been vaccinated, hundreds of millions across the world. Right. And obviously the rate of the death of COVID is greater than any of that have to do with the vaccine. You know, the data is just tells us that it's just clear. And I tell people, look, in Essex County, over 2,000 people died from COVID. More than half of those deaths are Newark. And more than half of the people that died in Newark are black. So we have a greater sense of urgency to deal with this than everybody else. We should. And if you're just telling people don't get vaccinated, you're setting them up for failure, for death. We've seen too much of this, especially if you don't have any alternative. You tell people they just need to exercise and take vitamins. That is what's unscientific, right? That's unscientific. I mean, we know that disease and other things your body can respond better and, you know, help you fight off stuff if your health is better, obviously. But many of us, our health is not better. And that's why the disease is ravaging us. And doing that for a month is not going to help you defeat COVID. It's just that simple. And people need to do stuff to be able to fight this. Prayerfully, somebody comes up with a cure or some other kind of thing. In the meantime, people need to protect themselves from it.
Right.
And mandates are not new, you know. I mean, there was a mandate for smallpox. Thank God, you know, the virus they put in blankets to kill Native Americans. There was a smallpox. There was a virus for a vaccine for smallpox, a vaccine for polio, for rubella, for mumps, the measles. They were all mandatory.
Right.
You know,
right.
So this is not a new thing. You know, it's just been highly politicized. And the Democrats and Republicans are responsible for the atmosphere that exists.
Right. And I guess one of the cases and arguments I make is if someone and there are things that we are mandated to do, and you could say to take your liberties away, and we acquiesce to it. But setting that aside, I guess the other thing I stress with people is if it were just you decided to just not and it would only affect you, you know, that's kind of one thing. But the reality is in this situation, your refusal to get the vaccination is also affecting others. And that's when I try to drive that point home. It's not just you.
That's right.
Yeah, it's others that are being affected.
That's why you got to wear a seatbelt. That's why you can't drive drunk.
Right, absolutely.
While alcohol is legal, you can't do it while you're driving.
Right.
Right, it's mandated. Why? Because you're not only putting yourself in danger, everybody on the road with you is in danger.
Right. Well, let's turn to another topic. I just had to get that in because, you know, I take a lot of heat on the air when I'm talking about these vaccinations. Lead pipes, one of the crises, and I was sharing information with your outstanding team, and they reminded me, they said, we're making great progress. We've been breaking records. We got some major milestones coming up in relationship to the lead pipe replacement program that you've innovated and instituted. So it'd be great to just share that news of where we are on the lead pipe replacement in the city of Newark.
So we've replaced over 21,000 lead service lines already. which is probably more than any other, what is more than any other city in America, has replaced. And we've already finished replacing all the lead service lines that we had on our list that existed. We are now going around looking at old homes, checking people's to see if houses to see if they in fact have one, and we're changing those. And I think we have like a little over 1,000 of those homes like that to look at, and we should be finished in the next couple of weeks.
Great.
Basically, we'll be done. Yep.
Right. Wonderful. I also saw in one of the outstanding Newark reports that the press reports that I put out, because you are continuing to stress economic development and finding additional resources to push economic development. And I saw a recent announcement of, I guess, another increase in resources that are going to be pumped in to help, sisters and brothers and, people to do economic development, build entrepreneurship, build businesses and so forth. So I'm wondering whether you'd also just share that information with us as well.
So we've just been putting money aside for businesses that would affect it. We're paying people's rent. We also put $20 million aside for developers who are interested in developing housing at 30% of the AMI. That's like for a family of four that make about $34,000 that develop housing for them. We are trying to make sure that while development comes to the city, that we also create a stock of housing for people who need affordable housing, low income, and we're going to continue to do that.
The next thing I'd like to talk to you about is the tremendous emphasis that you have placed on education, but also youth programs and getting young people involved. Actually doing some reading of books, doing narration and storytelling, and just rolling up your sleeves and getting there with young people and various programs to encourage our young people. And I'm wondering whether there's anything new that you've developed and, in the last maybe couple of months.
Yeah, we actually put together a program for the summer. We hired over 100 young people who are in, for lack of a better term, in trouble with the law enforcement, folks who are formerly, young people who are formerly incarcerated but were engaged in the kind of thing. So we created a special program for them to go through workshops, and we used some of the local organizations, and we paid them to do that, like REFAL, organizations like that, to be able to provide them with education, with opportunity, with self-esteem, with pathways to get out of the circumstances and situation that they're in. So we had over 100 young people, when I say young, like you're talking about 18 to 24, just trying to get them focused. And we did that this summer. And we're probably going to do a Saturday Academy to continue that throughout the fall and the winter until we go to the full. And we paid them to do that. So.
Right. Wonderful. Wonderful. And by the way, your universal basic income program, is that up and running yet?
Up and running, brother, up and running. We are enrolling about 400 families there now. 30 people, 30 families have already started. And so we should probably have, I'm probably wrong with that number in terms of probably more families that have already started. But we're enrolling 400. And we should, that should be completely done by the fall. The end falls in, and they'll be getting that for the next 2 years.
Right. And just to refresh it, because sometimes I make the mistake of assuming people know what we're talking about. Some people may not know what we're talking about. So just refresh our audience's understanding of when we say universal basic income, what is that all about? What are the premises? What are the goals? What are the objectives of a universal basic income program?
So it's a targeted program at folks who we believe need support and resource in perpetuity, sort of like the government realized that it was necessary to have these stimulus checks. So it really is a fight to have what the stimulus checks are, in perpetuity for specific families. Some of the stuff King talked about, a guaranteed income.
Right.
And it's not, like an exorbitant amount of money, right? It is a small amount of money. You know, we give people like $500 a month or a lump sum over a period of time because we are also measuring, you know, the results of it. And, you know, research says that families in certain situations, certain income levels, if they had a $400 emergency in a month, that it would crush them because they just don't have money for emergencies. And what we're finding, just like the stimulus checks, is people spend their money on their rent, they spend the money on food, they spend the money on schooling, all those things. And you know, it makes their quality of life better. It drives people away from poverty. These are the things that we want to do, and we're doing it because we want to encourage the state and federal government to do it.
Right, absolutely.
So it's a pilot program here. And we're with a whole host of mayors throughout the country. We're doing it. So we're not doing it by ourselves. You know, we're doing it with a whole host. And I got to give credit to Michael Tubbs in Stockton,
yeah.
Former mayor there, who started this Mayors for Guaranteed Income. You know, and we're still pushing strong with it.
Right. Yeah, I mentioned Michael Tubbs earlier because I was talking about some of the progressive mayors across the country. And it's important that people understand these concepts. That's why I wanted to take that out a little bit. That brings me to this major national discussion that is underway. And I, again, you know, trying to get our audience to understand what is happening, what is going on, and why, and really what's at stake. Because arguably the Biden programs, the Build Back Better, the overall two infrastructure bills and so forth are, you know, I mean, you could critique a little here, critique a little there, size and all that. But conceptually, you know, seem to represent one of the most significant, you know, social programs in the last half century or so. I mean, I know. So how important is it for the sort of the, first of all, how important are these programs in terms of just what they will, how will they impact, you know, Newark, New Jersey? How will they impact people in the state of New Jersey and across the country?
I mean, first, the ARP dollars have been significant. American Recovery Plan dollars have been incredibly significant. First group of money like that, tranche of money like that coming to cities. As you said, in decades, money usually go to states and counties, come into cities directly. It's been tremendous helping us recover from the pandemic, help people in need right now, feeding people, keeping people in their house, you know what I mean, helping people's businesses recover. It's been tremendous. And if that's happening all over the country, I mean, that is helping America not fall into deep recession. And it's important. And then this infrastructure bill, if it gets passed, you're talking about trillions of dollars that will go towards, you know, roads, bridges, all kind of other things, broadband, all of that stuff that would help us, you know, close the digital divide, create thousands of jobs, fix the infrastructure at the same time. I think it'll be an incredible boost for the economy, this opportunity for people to make money and to get employed. And it fixed, you know, looming problems that we've had for decades, you know, in terms of infrastructure, tunnels and bridges and all of those things that need to be, you know, updated, upgraded. And
right.
So I think it's tremendous. In Newark, you know, it would help us, you know, for generations to come.
Right. And one of the things, too, you know, there's two bills and one of the things I often ask people to do when people start talking about American exceptionalism is to see that, you know, most Western democracies, except the United States of America, have paid pregnancy leave, paid family leave. I mean, you know, all these kinds of basic programs. And the human infrastructure bill includes things like that, cutting child poverty, you know, pre-K,
right.
Making it permanent. I mean, this is like, for once, it seems the tilt will be towards, you know, working people, the poor and
yes.
The middle class, as opposed to the 1%.
Yeah, the social side of those programs, exactly. Child tax credits and all that other kind of stuff. That's also tremendous. If they can get it out of there, you know, if they can get it out of the Senate and the Congress, you know, it would be probably the largest kind of social package like that since the New Deal.
Right. Yeah, and that's why, again, you know, it's so important that moderates, so-called moderates and progressives, you know, unify to get this done, because it's going to be, you know, it has such power. And I guess the last part of that also has to do with, you know, this sort of struggle in America between these right-wing white nationalist obstructionists, the MAGA crowd, the orange man, and all this existential threat around voting and all these other issues, and the importance of the ability of, you know, for lack of a better term, the Dems, moderates, and progressives to message so that people understand. And I say I'm saying this because I have a concern about what they're now calling a message deficit. I've been talking about this for a while. You know, it's one thing to do things, but after a while, people need to know where the bread and butter came from, you know, because, you know, it's going to be about in 2022, 2024, you know, we got to wake up folk who will mobilize to engage, because otherwise these right wing folk, man, they're trying to institute white minority rule.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what's happening. You know, it's a serious backlash. You know, I would say from Obama and other kind of things, a serious backlash from Obama and from Trump getting removed out of office. And, you know, these people, that the whole fight that they're pushing back against the economy, against, you know, so-called critical race theory, all this other kind of stuff. It is, you know when people's privilege are attacked, they feel oppressed. Right. So they're going to push back hard. And they will ignore their own economic interests in order to keep us where we supposed to be, where right. They think we supposed to be.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, finally, Mayor, in terms of just the work you're doing, and I'm saying this, I hope folks, and I always pound on this, sort of appreciate the way in which your administration is approaching things, because people have been so turned off by electoral politics, so turned off by politics, so to speak, that sometimes, you know, these benefits come down. And it's like they don't. It's like people don't make a distinction between, you know, you now have this because there are certain people who believe certain things, and there's some other people who don't believe these things. You know, it's kind of getting people to understand on whose side you stand, because at the end of the day, that's the battle that we're now fighting in terms of police accountability and reform, voting rights, all these issues. And people kind of need to know on whose side we're standing. And, you know, the messaging around that becomes incredibly important.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, just the clarity that's needed, you know, there are a lot of people that they get in their bunker and they push the line, and there's no real clarity on what our condition is, the situation is, or the road out of it. And, you know, it's just real fundamentalism and not the ability to see a real strategy on how we move forward and how to create a real united front. And, you know, it's become problematic and been used against us for decades.
Right, absolutely. Well, Mayor Rajay Baraka, again, we appreciate you taking time out of your extraordinarily busy schedule to come on Vantage Point once a month to give a State of Newark report, and also to give your perspectives on what's happening nationally and internationally. And we wish you well. And obviously, Institute of the Black World 21st Century continues to focus in whatever ways we can on Newark as a model, not perfect, because there is no perfection given where we are, but it is, the perfection is in the striving. And certainly the efforts that you're making set a model for all of the mayors around the country to emulate and to imitate. So we appreciate you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Dr. James.
All right. Okay. Honorable Rajay Baraka is, again, on once a month here on Vantage Point. And we'll continue to have him on. He does take time out. You know, he's very, very busy. And we appreciate that he would take time to come on WBAI once a month to give a State of Newark report and to share his perspective. And of course, you know, people can disagree and agree. And, you know, he doesn't shy away from that, by the way. I mean, he comes from a family that's willing to engage. That's for sure. And there's no hesitancy to articulate a point of view and to do the work. But I think in his administration, you have a model that I believe in very strongly and think is very, very positive. Let's now shift and open our phones up because I want to hear, take the temperature of our audience on R. Kelly, what people think about it. The way we're phrasing it is the verdict on R. Kelly, predator or victim of the media, because there are lots of different views on this. This is something that unfolded over years. This is not something that just happened like last week or like 6 months ago. This is something that has been unfolding for years. And I remember that interview with Gail King, I guess it's on CBS, and he just said, you know, I didn't do this. These people are trying to wreck my career. They're trying to hurt me. They're trying to harm me. I ain't did none of this. And he was very emotional, very strong in denying. And yet, at the end of the day, you know, a jury here in New York found him guilty, and there are even more charges pending. So I'd be interested in getting your perspective at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. Can give us a call. And because I'm interested, too, about how we see this, frankly, inside of, I mean, everybody has a right. I mean, anybody can call. But I'm interested in how we see this inside of the Black community. Because there's kind of this debate going on and has gone on to some degree that there are some who say that there's an effort to just sort of stigmatize and to just tear down Black men. And some say, you know, it's about trying to tear down, you know, prominent Black men. We have these people who have images and they're doing successfully. And here we come with these, you know, these charges and tearing people down. And there are others who say, look, you know, we need to deal with the issue of, you know, sexual predators, of the whole question of sexual assaults and, you know, some kind of incest, some of these kinds of issues that have been going on that have really traumatized women and men and families internal to the Black community, but kind of been swept under the rug. That it needs to be surfaced, and we need to deal with it. And dealing with R. Kelly was one aspect of that. I do remember having Tarana Burke on, and Tarana Burke pointed out that, man, she was like hounded. I mean, people just like called her everything but a child of God, because when it was not so popular, she was early on saying, we cannot allow this kind of behavior in our community. And, you know, she's the founder of the Me Too movement and whatnot. And I'm glad she's finally getting some recognition, because it's like everybody else is getting recognition but her. But she's somebody that I know. I met her in Selma, Alabama. She's working on the bridge crossing jubilee, if you will. Very strong and very committed to this issue of internally dealing with sexual abuse in the Black community. And from her perspective, not to harm us, but to make us whole, to make us more healthy. 212-209-2877, 209-2877 is the number to call. Phones are wide open right now. We have plenty of time to get as many callers in as possible to talk about R. Kelly, the verdict on R. Kelly, predator or victim of the media. That's kind of the way I'm phrasing it in order to just elicit opinions, because this is an issue that I think we should be talking about, and no better way place to talk about it than on these airways to talk about, you know, how we should be coping with these crises. 212-209-2877. The lines are wide open on Vantage Point to get into this conversation about R. Kelly. No question about his brilliance. I mean, he is someone who, I mean, one of the great R&B artists. I guess that's the appropriate categorization of our time. The whole notion was, I mean, I believe I can fly, but jailbirds can't fly. And that's where he is going to be, because though he sang a certain way and could croon a certain way and could captivate audiences in a certain way, there seemed to have been a schizophrenic pattern of behavior in which he was behaving one way in public, but also virtually mesmerizing and captivating women in a way that was found to be inappropriate. In fact, he was found guilty. So again, we want to open it up. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. All right, we have a couple of callers. Let's get the conversation going. This is the professor. Welcome to Vantage Point.
Is this me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Peace and blessings to your brother, Ron Daniel.
Thank you.
All right, this is Brother Black from Brooklyn.
Yes.
I know you have a lot of quarters and time is of the essence. Always give support to the station and every cause that I can give support to. I'm not a rich man, okay?
Right.
Okay, so let me hit on a few topics quick fast for you. First of all, about R. Kelly, right? I'm an African-American man living in East New York, Brooklyn, right? There's a million R. Kellys running around here, okay? And let me say this in clarity. The learned behavior of R. Kelly is that of his slave master. The rape, robbing, and murdering of black bodies been going on since this country has been an inception. And this man is no exception to the rule. That's learned behavior. I call it skin lust. And I'll say it like this to simplify it. Thank God it wasn't your daughter, and everybody deserves to have their judgment upon people who can be judged, okay? I'll put it simple like that. Does that make sense?
Well, I hear you. I hear you. I like that phrase you call it, skin lust.
Yes, yes. And I'll go into a little detail about that. We're in the age now where there are 64 shades of blackness, right? And everybody on the planet has their preference. Some people like light skin, some people like dark skin. But I'm going to make a fact about that. There's only one shade on the planet, and that's black. Everybody know that. Caucasian people don't come from black people, okay? We literally have to understand that this skin lust is causing people to lose their mind in a later date. So you're going to see a lot of sex, a lot of robbery, a lot of murdering, and that's because of people and the materialistic of things that they have, name, brands, this and that, if it makes a little sense. Does it make a little sense to you, Mr. Daniel?
Well, I'm hearing you. You speak your mind and speak
okay,
your opinion.
Daniel,
now,
that's why I said, and I love you for always, because you know why, whether it's Reverend Al, Reverend Farrakhan, or whoever, we can agree to disagree all day, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just letting you're just, you know, laying out your opinion. So just finish up
okay,
on R. Kelly, because we're just talking about R. Kelly today. We're not talking about a whole bunch of other names. It's
okay,
R. Kelly. What your thought is on R. Kelly?
I'm gonna go back to the subject, like you said. If that was my daughter, I wouldn't care what the courts would be saying right about now. You understand what I'm saying?
I got you. I hear you.
Okay, now back to the thing. We gotta focus on the real issue here. R. Kelly is one part of the system. We got to focus on the people who are around R. Kelly. You understand what I'm saying? But this been going on for decades. You understand? Decades.
I hear you. All right. Okay. Well, we got you. You're very passionate about it, and we appreciate your call. Others can call at 212-209-2877. The issue is the verdict on R. Kelly, predator or victim of the media. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hello,
you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Things that he did obviously wasn't right, but I have to ask myself, for these 13, 14, 15-year-old girls that were taken advantage of, where were the parents? How were their parents allowed to sit back and let this happen to their daughters? You know, I have children. I have two daughters and a son, and I stay on top of them. You know, whatever they're doing, what are you doing? Where did you go? Who did you see? But why is it that they let their daughters go through things like this with this guy, you know, who was obviously taking advantage of these little girls? I mean, I used to be like an amateur photographer in Manhattan for this well-known photographer, and like these women would come up there And he would say, well, tomorrow we're going to do nude photographs. And the girls would come up there, give them $20, pull off their clothes and do everything, you know, just for a couple of dollars. Don't the women have some type of responsibilities, too? I mean, why are you letting all this the fall on the men? Women have some responsibilities in this, too.
Well, what responsibility do women have?
To say, no, I'm not going to do this. You know, I'm not going to prostitute myself for $10 or $5 or $500 or whatever.
Okay, all right. Well, let's pose that to the audience as well, because there are differences of opinion on this, and we appreciate your perspective. Thanks for calling. 212-209-2877. The caller says, don't women bear some responsibility, too? And what about the parents? He raises the question, and our audience hopefully can weigh in on those questions. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. The question is the verdict on R. Kelly, predator or victim of the media? You could slice it a lot of different ways. The question is, how real is it? What does this mean? How significant is it? Is it a problem? Is it not a problem? What's the nature of it? That's what we're really trying to get to. Let's go to our audience again. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yes, how you doing?
Doing fine.
Yes, I like to say the R. Kelly verdict is a very huge verdict in this community, especially black, white, across the board. This is what I have to say. We knew that R. Kelly was a great performer, a great talent, but we don't know that there's a monster in some of us and sometimes it's not. But the other caller was right, because women are attracted to money. They know that this man had money. And sometimes they will let you, it will go on and on and on. But like the other caller said, if somebody attacked you or did something to you, it should be your responsibility to report it right away or fight them off. But I think they let this thing build up and build up because he had money. So I think it's a two-way street. He could have been wrong and evil. And then I think society in general, especially the black community, we have to get more involved in our families. The fathers are missing. Years ago, if I wanted to marry your daughter, I had to ask your father, can I marry you? And I had to have a job, and I had to be responsible. Now the young girls don't want the families involved. This is my life. I do what I want to do, you know? And it's sad that we in New York City in 42nd Street used to be called the Minnesota Strip. And these runaways, they run away, and these men pick them up, and I heard it was one male that accused R. Kelly of doing stuff too. So it's sad on both ways. It's disturbing. He was a great talent. I don't know what happened, but if he did do anything, he deserves to go to jail.
Right.
And
all right.
Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate your perspective. Would like to hear some women's voices in this conversation. Sisters, women out there, please call and give your perspective. We've only heard from men so far. And there is a question that was posed by both the latter two callers about the behavior of women. And do women bear some responsibility in this overall process of abuse and assault and, in the case of R. Kelly, essentially keeping people, at least the allegations are when he was found guilty of it, essentially keeping people as quasi, almost as sex slaves, frankly. And then there's a question of trafficking, too, because some of the women were underage. They were under 18 years under 18 years old and therefore went across borders. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877, a family conversation. That's interested in hearing how people address this question in terms of how we, somebody talked about the strength of the family and how we strengthen our families and how parents get involved and child rearing issues of people raising themselves and whatnot. So it used to not be that way for sure, though, by the way, some of these issues have existed for quite a while. The whole issue of internally abusing, issues of incest and child abuse and, you know, men, you know, even and relatives taking advantage of girls in the family, and it kind of got swept under the rug. And I don't know what these young women or family members did to deserve this, in fact. But so these are some of the issues that we're talking about. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, hey, hey. I didn't follow. I didn't follow Kelly in the news, so I can't make a comment about whether he's innocent or what the media did to him. But I'm going to make a general comment, and that is there are good and bad in all groups. Black people are not perfect. White people are not perfect. Women are not perfect. And nobody is perfect. We're all human beings, no matter what happened to us in the past, and we all have to take responsibility for ourselves. So what do you think of those cookies?
You know, I kind of think you really should know about the case, because this is a specific case, and, you know, we all know there are good people and bad people. That's kind of not, you know, I mean, yeah, that's okay, but that doesn't really get into the analysis and the assessment of really unpacking the intricacies and of this and how we ought to be dealing with this as a society. There was the emergence of a Me Too movement that now is pretty popular, though in some quarters I think people still feel that it's not a good movement. Some people feel it's gone too far, and there's a whole feeling among some that men are being indicted and harassed and harangued and whatever. But it does deal with issues of patriarchy. It does deal with issues of the abuse of women for generations, frankly, and nothing being done about it. So, you know, so it's really not a frivolous topic. It's really not a light topic. It's one that is very, very, very serious. And the case of R. Kelly was a big case, because there were women who were saying, no, don't tear the brother down. You know, I mean, because he was famous and he was good, and women shouldn't be accusing him and whatever. And others were saying, no, I mean, he's guilty. This shouldn't happen. So there was a debate. And so we need to have this kind of conversation. 212-209-2877. Let's go back to our listening audience. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Yeah, good afternoon. With regards to R. Kelly's case, well, they said they found the evidence and he's guilty. However, I agree with some of the callers who said that, where are the people who facilitated this? Where are the parents? So even though R. Kelly might have done a lot of things that were not right, the parents should also be dragged into and charged. Children up to the age of 18 are still, as far as I understand under the law, are supposed to be under parental control. And all these parents allow these children for all that stuff to be perpetrated on them, they should be dragged into it too and charged. R. Kelly did, based on what they say, he didn't do right, but the parents also. It is time for also people to hold parents. If they're adults, I can understand. And one other thing, adult men should realize, look for people your age to have your sex with or to have your whatever, but not children. It is not cool. And especially if you are popular or you're what they call what now, a special, you know, whatever, celebrity, you know,
right.
It is not cool to take advantage of anybody, regardless of color, creed, or whatever. There's right and wrong. Don't be recruiting young people for your sexual fantasies or whatever. Choose people your age that you could say, you know what, it was consensual sex or whatever. And I do thank Mr. Kelly for that lovely song. I didn't even know he was the one who sang it. I Believe I Can Fly. What a lovely song. But Mr.
Yeah,
Kelly,
it was incredible song. No question.
That's why I didn't even know he was the one, because really I'm not the person who followed, you know. However,
yeah, right. Yeah,
I hope if he's going to get a long prison term, whatever it is, I don't know. But I hope he will draw from it, strengthen himself, and you know, regroup and, you know, hey, maybe make better of himself.
Right. Well, and let me just also hope that his victims will also have an opportunity to heal, because while there were some who were underage, others were not. And consensual is one thing, what the verdict, what the jury decided was this was not consensual in terms of what he did and the way in which he conducted himself was not consensual. It was sexual assault. It was sexual abuse. And so these victims also need to heal because very often they don't speak up. They are afraid to speak up. There's a kind of way in which people get locked into a syndrome and they take it. They take the abuse. And this has been well documented as well. So these are things that we kind of need to understand when we're talking about these issues. 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Let's go to another caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Kevin from New York. How y'all doing?
We're doing fine.
Hey, listen, I think R. Kelly was just a president, man. And I've been following him for some years now. And I seen the first video and the things that he was doing, man. Hey, listen, unfortunately, I feel really bad for the victims, but this guy is a victim of his own circumstances and his own behavior. And my thing is, anybody around his camp that was assisting him, they all need to be charged. And the parents, I don't know about charging them, but they need to take some form of responsibility as well. But R. Kelly is sad. But R. Kelly, he's done. It's over for him. His life is over. Completely
right.
Over. You know? And I got four daughters of my own. I heard one other caller say, you know, well, he probably would do whatever. Sometimes we think like that. But you know what? I feel the same way. But, hey, R. Kelly got convicted of all 9 charges in New York and faces some more charges, I think, through other states. He is
That's
his,
right.
Man. You understand? This should be a message that should be going out to the rest of these predators out here. Y'all better snap out of it. You understand? Because
right.
You can't continue doing this, you know, to young girls. You know, and that's my thing, man. It's just about
all right. Okay. Appreciate it. All right, let's see, can we get one more in, because we're up against the clock. I think we may have one more caller or so. Good afternoon, you're on Vantage Point.
Nope.
Oh, we don't? Okay, I was hoping I thought maybe we had one more caller. But anyway, we're up against the clock, and I enjoy having these kinds of conversations. We are going to have Tarana Burke on. We'll advertise it. I did get confirmation. She is extraordinarily busy. You see her on MSNBC, CNN, ABC, all of the channels. And you see her all over the place because she is the founder of the Me Too movement. She is somebody I know and have a relationship with and respect. And got to know her again in the work I was doing around in Selma, Alabama, the annual bridge crossing Jubilee of Bloody Sunday. Now, she is just a fabulous, fabulous advocate, but she took a lot of abuse, a lot of heat, but she stayed on course because she really believes in healing the race. She is an advocate for Black people, no question about it, but she took some major hits from major personalities, and I want to see how she feels now in terms of what's happening with R. Kelly. But beyond that, what does this really mean? What's the significance of it? And get her take on some of the questions that were just raised today. You know, what responsibility do parents hold in this matter? And then what kinds of things do we need to break out of the cycle so that we can be healthy and whole as a people? But certainly this kind of behavior is not healthy. It's not wholesome. And as one of our callers said, and I agree with this, this is a part of the whole question of traumatic slave syndrome. We have, unfortunately, it doesn't affect everybody, but it can show itself in ways that is very, very, very destructive. So we certainly want to address it. So we really appreciate everybody calling and being a part of the conversation. Again, thanks to the Honorable Raj J. Baraka for coming on and sharing what's going on in Newark and across the country in terms of some of the policies. And we appreciate this opportunity to do this here on Vantage Point. And we will see you again here next week on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. This is Professor saying, see you again next week. We gotta fight the powers that be.